Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
If your restaurant wants to put the best on the table, look for food with a New York State Certified seal. It's food that is grown right, right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carbone
from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Daisy, we're back from Bushwick with the last show of 5776 for all my Jewish friends out there, and today is going to be a real bell ringer. Can you dig it? All the way from Shanghai, Pizza Rumba is back.
Where am I? I know nothing about the American defense systems. I know nothing. Wait, where am I?
The Manchurian flesh tone has returned from behind the Iron Curtain.
My name is Peter Zaramba.
With tales to tell, doing Chinese waiter jokes and other Sputnik-era humor.
Oh, God. Excellent.
And I understand
that was Buddy Hackett's routine, right? He used to put the rubber band over his eyes, and then he said he thought it was funny until some Chinese guys beat him up and proved that it wasn't. I don't blame him.
But you're back from the Orient with silk and other gifts, I understand?
I am back with a special taste delight, but we'll get into that.
All right. And joining us is my favorite local historian, the great John Strassbaugh, whose new book is City of Sedition, The History of New York City During the Civil War. We're going to be talking about Brooklyn abolitionists.
Yeah, man.
I can't wait. Yeah. Because
sedition.
Because when people think about...
I like sedition.
Sedition, I'm all for it.
Most seditious city north of the Mason-Dixon.
Well, when people think of the Civil War, they may not think of New York City, but this book is absolutely fantastic, and we're going to talk about it. But before we do, it is Rosh Hashanah tonight, so I brought you all some apples and honey.
Blow your chauffeur.
Blow the chauffeur. There you go.
So that's a Ron Chan surplus kazoo. A lot of crazy things going on here, but I do have apples and honey, which is symbolic. Lashana Tova, we say, and wish everybody, all our listeners and everybody here, a very sweet New Year. So let me get some apples and honey. And I want to tell you something, Pete Zaramba. You know, we've done on the show a lot of times shows we call sometimes, Dude, Where's My New York? And this weekend, I felt very plugged in. We went to that great ham tasting the other night.
We did. That was wonderful.
Right? Like a real...
A revelation.
A revelation. And last night, I was at the greatest art opening I had been to in... I mean, since the
80s. What was it?
It wasn't Hoboken, okay? But nonetheless...
Was it part of this Bushwick art
world? It was... it was our good friend, Julie Wilson.
Julie Wilson.
You know Julie Wilson. And her show was out in Hoboken. I was there with Bob Burt, who's been a habituant on this show.
Sure,
and Bob. A few of our other good friends. And it was... You know, it was a happening. It wasn't white walls with eight pieces of art. It was just everywhere you look, there were some bits of wonder, and there's this African jazz combo playing, and people were smoking dope in the alleyway, and it was great. So it exists. I felt very plugged in, and if you're sort of like paying attention so much, and to get off the train today, and Bushwick was hopping. I mean, the art walk's going on, and there was the vintage truck, and like some weirdo singing Frank Sinatra songs in the corner. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling
it. It was hard to avoid hitting these people with the car.
Well, there's the other thing is, yes, the urge to punch everyone you see, but I was genuinely feeling some vibrancy in New York.
Very vibrant. And the ham thing, the country ham.
Ham. Where was this?
This was at the Brooklyn Kitchen. Right around the distance from my house. Uh-huh. It was amazing. Country. I never thought of the idea of thin slicing American country ham the way you'd slice speck or prosciutto or Iberian ham. And it was amazing. What's that? A broadbent?
The broadbent ham.
Broadbent ham. Come on.
Which is ham. This was all sponsored by Heritage Foods USA and our friend Patrick Martin's apples and honey again for a sweet new year. Dave, the engineer, please have
very join sweet.
Us. So they're from Kentucky. The broadbent ham people. Old, I mean, they're church-going, very nice Kentucky folk who've been, you know, curing hams forever. And Patrick says to them, oh, well, you know, Mike here knows Larry Flint. He used to work with Larry Flint very well, right? Who, you know, Larry's from Kentucky, and they, you know, the color just drained from their face. You know, Mike used to work for a hustler. He goes, do you know anybody? And I'm like, Patrick, they're, this is not going to win them over. This is like, yeah, exactly. Then we had to take a ride over to the venue, and poor Mrs. Broadbent sort of basically had to sit on my knee because the car was all jammed into the car. And she gets out, and Patrick's like, you ever sit that close to someone who's worked for Larry Flint?
Oh.
They're like, oh, Jesus Christ, Patrick.
He would lay off, huh?
I don't know.
Leave it to Patrick.
Yeah.
Well, you know. They came to New York, so what do they expect?
I know.
A seditious city that was sided with the South during the war. Well, not really.
Well, a lot
the
of
lower
did.
Classes did.
A lot of people did.
The upper classes, of course, did.
Well,
not,
I think shifting our topics to the slightly less controversial, talking about the Southern ham. I think when people think about the Civil War in New York, the first thing they think about are the draft riots. That's to me the thing that I know, or the first thing that I knew about.
It's the one thing everybody knows, yeah.
Now, how accurate was Gangs of New York's portrayal of this period?
Not very.
I didn't think so. The village that they built, the set, reminded me of the set that they built for the big Popeye movie with Robin Williams.
That's
you know?
A good analogy.
That was kind of the New York that they created. And the acting was similar.
New York was, you know, it was low. Nothing was above five stories high, and it was crowded, and it was filthy and dirty. And they, you know, they tried, but they didn't do it. You know, like TV shows now do a better version of recreating what things look like. I was looking at that one, Peaky Blinders, which is set in like 1920 in where is it set?
Birmingham,
and it looks like you're in 1920 in Birmingham. They did a good job of that.
That's one of my son's favorite shows. What about you, Mike? Peaky Blinders?
I liked it when Abraham Lincoln was on Star Trek.
I liked.
Oh,
it.
That was great.
See,
oh, wow.
Well, we grew up in that era of the centennial of the Civil War, so the Civil War was a hot item.
It was everywhere. Yeah.
Lincoln was also on Twilight Zone many times.
I remember. At least one.
More times than Captain Kirk.
More times. Well, he was on around three.
He was on two or three times.
Okay, Lincoln.
Yeah,
okay,
so. So we're Lincoln. All right, so. What do you want to know about the riots?
Well, you know, like I said, was Gangs in New York like a real portrayal?
No,
I understand,
of course
though,
not.
Reading your book in some sense, Kat, there's a real demographic shift in Manhattan, really chasing out the African Americans out of Manhattan and moving to the outer boroughs, and that was the first real...
Who wouldn't have left? If you were black, they were definitely chasing you down, and a bunch of black males got caught, hung and quartered, dragged through the street, violated.
Of Lower Manhattan.
Yeah, mutilated. Well, you know, and Manhattan was only Lower Manhattan at that point. But above 42nd Street, things got pretty lonesome. So, you know, and that was all that was New York City, because Brooklyn was still a separate municipality at that point. But, yeah, so lots anybody who could flee the city during that week of the riots in July 1863 got out.
Was it necessary for Lincoln to divert some of the Navy to shell parts of Manhattan?
No.
Okay, so that's...
No, he did not do that.
So that
was that in Gangs of New York?
There was all sorts of stuff in there.
U2 soundtrack.
Yeah, you might.
Yeah. No, but he did eventually send the army, and it did take the army to stop the riots, because there were basically no soldiers here, because Gettysburg was happening at the same time, so they had all left to head to Pennsylvania. So there was almost nobody here to defend things.
What I didn't know, and I'm a recent Brooklynite, moved to Brooklyn after living in Manhattan most of my life, was how strong the abolitionist movement was here in Brooklyn, right in Brooklyn Heights, just down the street from where I live, and I've become very fascinated with Plymouth Church.
Yeah, I live like two blocks from Plymouth Church. Yeah, the thing to remember is that there were really like two. New York was having its, and Brooklyn were fighting their own internal civil war at the same time that the bigger civil war was happening.
How so?
It was between the abolitionists, who both in New York City and in Brooklyn were the minority. They were very influential. They were powerful men. They tended to be men with money, but they were the minority.
Genteel folks.
A lot of them from New England. Yeah.
The Quakers.
They had, because New England was the hotbed of abolition. New Yorkers, or as they called themselves, Yorkers at that point, the great majority were anti-abolitionist, pro-slavery, pro-South, very much against Lincoln. New York and Brooklyn never voted for Lincoln. Both the two times he ran, they voted against him like 2-1. They were hostile to him when he passed through on his way to the White House. And my thesis is that an awful lot of that comes from the fact that the cotton industry was so huge in New York City. And New York City was so huge to the cotton industry.
Huge because it was a financial center.
Yeah, and the shipping center, and the merchandising centers, and the factories. It was the biggest factory town in the country at that point, New York City. We don't think of it as a factory town, but it was.
We've got to bring these merchandising jobs back.
Yeah, no kidding. And the factories, you know, that's all gone.
Bring back Lincoln.
It's about making New York great again.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think it's time we had. I think it's time we had a drink of whatever it is.
Okay, this is
what is this?
Okay. This is a gift of the Orient here, the mysterious Orient.
You are like the Marco Polo of rock.
I'm the Marco Polo of booze.
Oh, there you go.
So, what, I mean, you know, I was a little, I won't say disappointed with the food in China. I love the food in China. I was asked many times in China, how do you like Chinese food? So, they call it Chinese food there.
Did you try the dumplings? I heard the dumplings are fabulous.
I had dumplings every day. They are fabulous, and you could buy them for pocket change. They were delicious. No sizzling, sub gum or otherwise. No sizzling.
Sorry, so you can't get it on St. Mark's Place anymore either.
Yeah, you can't. Jade Mountain no longer exists.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So no
but
more
they had
sizzling.
Those juicy dumplings.
They had the juicy ones filled with broth that scalds your mouth.
Yeah. And the pork buns, which are like the White Castles of the Orient. Uh-huh.
Every day I had a pork bun, steamed pork bun. But this is something you can go. They have the equivalent of 7-Elevens now all over Shanghai. They call them All Days, and there's another one, a Lawson's from Hong Kong. And, okay, if you've got like 70 cents in your pocket and you want to get smashed, what you reach for is this stuff, Baijiu.
Man.
Okay, this
what is
called? Baijiu.
Baijiu.
Baijiu, and which means white wine or white spirit.
It means white lightning. I can tell from here.
It is 110 proof, and you can buy it in this little handy half-pint hip
very
flask
nice,
here.
Very nice. It
fits in the pocket, and you can pull on this as and the Chinese way, and we're going to do it right now. I'm going to crack. Actually, this is yours, Mike. Take this. Crack it open. Crack it open, Mike.
That's all right. That's
here we go. Let's demonstrate this right now. We're going to do this the traditional Chinese construction worker way.
Crack that
open.
Crack it open. I paid my 70 cents.
You paid your five and a half kwai.
Holy shit.
Five and a half kwai.
I'm afraid if I drop it,
that's
I'll
Red
blow
Star
up the whole
brand.
Studio.
It looks dangerous.
And what this is it's as people assume it's made from rice. It is not made from rice. It's distilled from sorghum.
Wow.
But no sizzling.
No sizzling.
I'll be the judge of that.
Take a poll.
Yeah, it might sizzle. Let's find out.
Take a poll, Mike. Just, no, come on. Don't sit it.
Oh.
Huh? I tell you, 70 cents will never get you
more
smash. John, try this.
All right.
Do it Chinese construction worker style.
Right
out of the bottle.
Wow.
But
you know, 110 proof. It's got some kick to it, but it's
got
more flavor than they would expect. Because I have this theory that every culture has some variation of the dumpling, whether it's an empanada or a canada lock or something. Every culture is a dumpling, and every culture has its own moonshine. Whether it's Slivovitz or Aguardiente, wherever you go,
Ireland,
somebody's making
grappa,
some bathtub
grappa.
Gin, grappa, and they're making a dumpling.
That kind of tastes like grappa, doesn't it?
Red Star brand.
Red Star.
Let me tell you something. You sold that for grappa in a high-end Italian restaurant, charge $18 for grappa.
You could.
And people will tell you, that's very smooth.
Ooh, that's smooth. That's nice.
I better try it again to make sure my first opinion was accurate.
And what's it called again? Say it again.
Baijiu, which literally means white wine.
White wine.
Or white spirit.
It does taste a lot like grappa.
It does, right?
Yeah.
It does have like a kind of a smooth, fruity finish to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's nice.
We'll have a smooth finish when we finish that bottle.
Or a fruity finish.
A fruity finish.
I don't know the other.
Yeah, have another pull there, John. No. So,
I brought my ukulele for the fruity.
I think it goes very nice with the honey and the apple.
It actually has
the sweetness of that.
There's almost like that honey aftertaste that I did not expect having. You know, the last time I had some like Chinese moonshine, it came in like a can, like one of those
can of moonshine.
Yeah, and it came in
like an oil can.
This was like a 1980s Chinatown find, mm-hmm. and it came in one of those cans. I guess what they call a gas treatment, like STP, yeah. that you pour into the tank. Because the top was a funnel, because it was meant to be poured directly into the gas tank, right? And that was.
So you poured this right down your gullet.
Right. It was rocket fuel, and. Yeah. That is the best 70
cent. This is really nice.
70 cent high. In fact, all three of us can get high with this. So that's 5.5.
I'm starting to realize now it has some certain psychedelic properties.
This was introduced to me by the guys in Round Eye, who are our hosts over there, the group. Gil was a big fan of. And the first dinner, he insisted on buying a bottle that came in a fancy China, you know, bottle with a seal on it and a ribbon. And this is much better. It's called Peking Red Star.
Red Star
factory Aizhou. Brand, made up north out of sorghum. So here, that's how
I'm getting stoned on it. I'll be honest with you. Hits on that.
We got to finish this, Mikey. Come on, yeah. John. Have a.
All right, I'll tell you what. We're going to come back.
They weren't drinking this during the riots.
they might have been.
Well, they had their own lightning.
Yeah,
their own moonshine.
Yeah.
Wow. No sizzling.
Wowie, Zowie. No, I'm sizzling.
It's good.
I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break. We're going to be back with Count Zaremba and Mr. John Strasbaugh talking about his fantastic book, City of Sedition, about New York City.
And this is one of the
war.
Most.
When we get back, I want to talk a little bit about one of the heroes of your book, one of my favorites, Walt Whitman.
Sure.
Tell us, we're going to play some Civil War era music right now. Tell us what we're going to hear.
I believe this is the McGarrigle Sisters doing Hard Times Come Again No More, my very favorite of Stephen Foster's songs.
All right, very groovy. We'll be right back here.
I love Stephen Foster.
Yeah. And this song is gorgeous, and they do a great version of it.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we are sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis a song.
New York chefs and restaurants are proud of the food they put on the table. And serving produce that comes from local, environmentally responsible farms is a way to leave an even better taste in everyone's mouth. So when shopping for your ingredients, look for the New York State Grown and Certified seal. It lets you know which food is grown right here in New York State, certifying the food that comes from local farms that meet a higher standard. You'll not only be serving local food, you'll be supporting local farmers. Learn more about the New York State Grown and Certified program at certified.ny.gov.
All right, and we're back here at the Ground Zero of Roberto's, the Heritage Radio Studio. Don't forget, we're member-supported, so if you're listening on your internet machine, please push that button that says Donate Now, and I'll come over to your house and I'll play the kazoo for you. Maybe Zaremba will bring you some of that Chinese moonshine, which Dave the engineer has now gotten into. So,
no, I haven't.
That denial is not doesn't fly with me.
Yeah. No one's buying. We're talking to John Strasbaugh about his fantastic new book, The City of Sedition: The History of New York City During the Civil War, and we're going to talk about Walt Whitman,
who's
a hero of this book. I don't know how many people would expect Walt Whitman to emerge as a hero in a book about the Civil War.
Walt, you know, he was one of the most... first off, in my opinion, Walt is the greatest poet in American history still to this day.
I absolutely concur. Everything that came after him was just...
It's unanimous.
When you're reading Allen Ginsberg, you're reading Walt Whitman.
Of course. And he would have admitted that. Allen would not certainly have denied that. When you read that original Leaves of Grass, the 1855 version, holy cow. It's at least 100 years ahead of itself.
I love what you had to say about him. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have a mark, but it was modern before there was modern.
Absolutely.
What did you say? It was a great line in your book about going from like a single atom to the entire swirling cosmos in a few lines.
He does that in those poems.
Did I paraphrase pretty closely?
Yeah. And he does that. It's just an amazing work. And Walt was an amazing guy. In the Civil War, he goes down to Washington looking for his brother, who was in the Union Army, and he saw him listed among the wounded. And Walt was worried about him, so he goes to Washington. He ends up spending the rest of the war in Washington as a kind of one-man USO, going around to the hospitals, bringing guys fruit, holding their hand, reading their mom's letters to them, whatever they needed. And he wasn't making any money doing that, so his friends up here were trying to raise money for him, and his friends in Boston were trying to raise money from Thoreau and Emerson and some of those more notable writers up there.
Yankee skinflints.
Well, it wasn't just that they were Yankees and cheap, it was that they knew that Walt was gay.
And so as
his friend who tried to raise the money from them said, they know that you have genitals and they think that nurses shouldn't have them, so they're not going to give you any money. People, we think that people didn't know about homosexuality until the 1960s or something, but everybody knew.
It was just
treated differently at the time.
I think my Roman and Greek friends might beg to differ.
There you go.
Another hero that emerged that I'm kind of fascinated with is Matthew Brady, and I think it's very important the role photography played in the Civil War and in the propaganda of the time.
Yeah, and that ties into your Plymouth Church, because Plymouth Church invited Lincoln. Lincoln wasn't even a dark horse. He was so nobody that when he came to New York in 1860, some of the newspapers misspelled his name.
Is that when he gave Cooper address?
The Cooper Union address. But Plymouth Church had invited him. So he's coming to speak at Plymouth Church. When he gets here, Plymouth Church is canceled because they don't think he's got enough of a name to draw a crowd. And churches were for profit in those days. They weren't nonprofits. So if you had a guy come speak, you had to get a crowd to make it worth your while. So Horace Greeley, the editor of the Tribune, and one of the big...
Hero of your book.
A great character, a wacky character, but a great one. And another one of the abolitionists brings him into Manhattan at Cooper Union. He gives that famous speech that launches his career. And that day, he gets that famous picture of him took by Matthew Brady, whose studio was a couple blocks away. And between that speech and that picture, now everybody, because it's New York, and New York's already the media center of the country, everybody around the country has read his words, seen his picture, and he gets elected president.
And what year would this have been?
1860. February 1860.
Just at the very beginning of the war.
Which precipitated the war.
Yeah, so he gets elected, and then the war happens.
Right. I love there's this political cartoon in your book here. It's Lincoln and Greeley, and it's mocking their black Republican agenda.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
Republican? Yeah, well, Republicans were the Democrats of that era, and the Democrats were the Republicans of that era. They switched in the early 20th
the
century.
The Party of Lincoln. They still like to hang on to that old.
Yeah, I know. But they've the polls have completely shifted, so no, they're not at all the same.
I'm going to have to read this book. I'm reading Mike's book for the second time.
Mike's book is great,
you
too.
You are a complete disappointment.
Thank you very much for saying that. Yeah, so what do you think about this whole book business? You're already into another one. I mean, sometimes I think I'm nuts, you know, for doing it again.
You are.
It's like having homework every day for 2 years.
Yeah.
And the rewards are high, but it's not a business plan I would recommend to anyone.
I tell when I was editing New York Press, some of the journalist teachers would invite me to come speak to their journalism students, and the first thing I would say to them all was, how many of you are picturing having a career in journalism? And they'd all raise their hands, and I would say, go back, run away, go, you know,
that's, they
while you
they
still have time.
They invited you in the way that, like, in the health ed, they invite a reformed drug addict.
There you go. Exactly.
To be, a cheerleader for the cause?
I was like the AA guy who comes to speak to you about that. Yeah. And they'd get so depressed, but it's a terrible career choice to want to be a writer or a musician or a dancer or an artist. You know, come on, it's ridiculous. We should have all gone to dental hygiene.
I'm a complete disappointment.
Yeah,
but
I'll
tell you what, somehow, and I'm kind of a survivor of the bad economy, and I'm really, you know, blessed and feel very fortunate that I work at my kitchen table, because every time I do have to truck in to, you know, Manhattan, I mean, the F train, it's the Matrix, you know, it's like, I just want to scream at these people, you should have taking the red pill.
Yeah. You know, it is getting weirder and weirder. The zombies, it's like Zombie Nation.
And that being said,
I'm talking to you people out there, you ones who walk around with your handheld devices, and you're pushing those buttons on the stairs.
That's the Matrix, baby. Yeah,
it is. People are so plugged in now. It's very strange.
It is a very strange,
I know, it's
strange
spooky
world.
To me.
You need to
like
go
it.
Back and watch Abe Lincoln on Star Trek and listen to what he had.
He said, Spock, help me.
Help me.
Help me, Spock, right. That was Abe Lincoln.
But it was a trap.
It was a trap.
It was a trap. So you're already onto your next book. You're working on
New York and World War II.
World War II, which is easier for me in my mind's eye to picture.
It's actually, it's turning out to be harder to write, though.
Okay, so here's the first image that comes to my mind. It's the end of the war. That's the first image of World War II in New York. It's the end of the war. It's Times Square. It's a sailor kissing the girl.
Yeah, VJ Day. And that guy was a German immigrant to New York, the guy who took the picture. And worked for Life and Time and all those places, and just was, you know, there he was taking that picture. But you know what? It's interesting, though, that I've seen a lot of variations. He wasn't the only guy who said, you two, get up there and kiss. I'm going to take your picture. He just did the best one, and the one that was in Life magazine. And Life magazine was the universe.
Well, it's one of those indelible images. It's up there with the man on the moon and Iwo Jima.
I haven't yet read it, but somebody did a book where they, because people didn't know who he was and who she was. And pretty recently, some authors figured it out. I got to read that. I haven't gotten to it.
What comes to my mind is the movie All Through the Night with Humphrey Bogart and Conrad Veidt.
Yeah.
Who Conrad plays?
Right.
He plays. But also
movie.
Phil Silvers is in this movie. Everyone's in this movie.
Oh, that's right. Phil's in
that And Jackie
movie.
Gleason.
That's right. He's a cop or something?
He's one of the gang. One of Humphrey Bogart's gang guys.
I watched that not too long ago.
Yeah,
that's good.
Well,
movie.
That's a New York.
And it's supposedly that's the first one where they really get talking about, I think that's All Through the Night, where they start talking about the German embassy in New York, which was all the way downtown at the Battery, and how they were involved with Nazi spies and yada, 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 because you didn't talk about that until we were actually in the war. Until we were in the war, we were, you know, you were more careful about talking about that stuff.
All Through the Night.
Yeah.
Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
Crazy times. Once again, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet. It's flying by, but before we go,
the jet lag.
You're still in China.
It's the Baijiu.
I know nothing about the American
the
defense system.
That Baijiu. Wait, there's one more. Before it actually melts the bottle.
It's yours. Hit it.
Okay, that's for the round eye guys if they're listening over in China.
Can you
get more of that?
I think it's probably red, not in the 7-Eleven the way it is in China. You can, you know,
I feel all warm
whip out
and
that 5.5.
I'm going to talk to my liquor store guys about that.
You know,
and don't buy it in the fancy bottle.
All right,
you know, buy this is
Red Star,
Peking Red Star. Factory brand.
I mean, I have to say, I have a
Working
taste
man's.
For moonshine and white lightning.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember being down Jean's south body. And. Remember it was warming up. Okay, we're going to go out with.
I did this. I didn't quite do this on stage as part of the American Trilogy, as Legends on Stage in Vegas.
I did get to
walk out after this was over in my own Elvis outfit and sing Rock and Roll Heaven
as
the finale.
Beautiful.
On stage in Vegas at. Where were they doing Legends on Stage? I don't know. Anyway.
one of them.
All right. Well, once again, thanks very much, John. Thanks for coming by.
John, that was great. Thank you very much.
We go way back together. The days of New York Press.
Can you get the studio audience clapping?
Dave, put on the
applause. Let me see if I can get them excited. Come on, everybody.
We're blowing the Kazooist chauffeur once again, LaShawna Tovlin. Happy New Year. Really wishing everybody a very, very sweet 5777.
How sweet it is.
Let's take a shot and go out with Elvis via the store.
We got to do our Elvis version.
Not too fast, baby. Let's give it the gravitas. Bounce Body Live.
I'm going to do it at Fleshtones tempo, not a rocket train tempo.
let's be reverent here. I'm going to think of my favorite Canadian actor, Raymond Massey,
in
Santa Fe Trail.
Uh-huh. All right, so you have to channel him to sing.
I'm channeling Raymond Massey.
All right. I'll channel
him. Old John Brown's body lies molding in the grave. While we weep the sons of bondage, he ventured all to save. But less his life while struggling for the slave. But his soul is marching on. Mikey, help me.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Good, John.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on.
Now John Brown was a hero, undaunted, true, and brave. And Kansas knows his valor when he fought her rights to save. The grass grows green above his grave. His soul is marching on. Johnny.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on.
Now let me tell you. He captured Harper's Ferry with his 90 men so few, and frightened old Virginia till she trembled through and through. They hung him for a traitor, themselves the traitor crew. His soul is marching on.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His soul is marching on.
Live from Roberta's, the best pizza in Bushwick. Let's have some pizza, Mike.
Yeah.
We earned it.
Hearts and seizures.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.